said I'm gonna buy a gun and start a war. If he can tell me something worth fighting for, oh, and I'm gonna buy this place is what I say. Blame it upon a rush of blood today.
Back, ladies and gentlemen, on the Vinnie Eastwood Show with the Reverend Michael Carter. Now, as a lot of research has kind of come to me about occult researchers in particular, is that when you're having a conversation with them, they have these thoughts about things that you've said, and then they take the conversation back to elaborate on one of them, and then the conversation progresses forward, and then it goes back again and forward. In so doing, you cover ground, and then you consolidate it, and then it becomes a rigid core of knowledge through almost repetition and reverting to its natural form in the conversational sense of the word. Or at least this is how I've found my conversations with, say, Frater X and James Robert Wright, who are profound Freemason scholars. So, yeah, I feel very similar with you. Now, you made a point on the previous segment about evolution being slow, and again, relating back to the frustration, but evolution can be sped up, all right? Wouldn't you say that fire or industrial agriculture sped up evolution, or
I'm with you, but I'm talking on a spiritual level.
Oh yeah,
But I agree with you, because when I had my contacts, my evolution was speeded up. No doubt that the way I looked at life, the way I approached life, was accelerated after meeting these beings. No doubt in my mind. And it's not to say I don't have problems. It's not to say, you know, I don't have a lot to learn. But I quickly, and okay, someone's probably saying, in what way?
Just in a general kind of way.
Well, my belief in separation has diminished tremendously. I touched on it before. The belief that you and I are separate, whether it's race, whether you're on the other side of the planet. But I really got from my head to my heart that we really are all connected. And what I do to you, I've really done to me. And people go lifetimes, and maybe I have, without really getting that. I get this now on much more than an intellectual level. I can feel it. Now, maybe even without, I'm not saying that people have to have other world intelligences come to you to make this happen. Not saying that. A lot of people get this without this happening. But for me, when I started having these contacts, and I still sometimes it's almost like I can't believe myself, the way I handle situations differently. I'm much more forgiving. I'm much more sensitive to the needs of others. I'm much more connected to this planet. I'm much more connected to that you and I are really one. And it's not just kumbaya, la-di-da. It's you know, something nice platitude. I really get that now in ways that I never got before.
And of course, understanding can always be furthered.
Always. Oh, always. And every day that, you know, I get a chance to do that. But yes, industrial revolution, Yes, the technological age in which we live, but that's evolution in the sense of, you know, for the sake of evolution, and it's a good thing. But I'm talking about more what King was talking about, more than what the great avatars and saints were talking about, that our spirituality has not caught up with it. That's why we're in the position today.
There's a Japanese saying that you've got to keep your eye on the past and your hand on the future.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think what that means today, or at least the way I interpret it, to the level of technology that we have today to spread truth, information, you can broadcast spirituality through radio waves, can't you? Many ministers have radio shows, TV shows, etc. And this thing seems to work out all for the better because you're spreading out more energy. Right, and that's using the knowledge of the past along with the technology of our current abilities, right? And I think that's what evolution is really about, is about learning how to effectively use the things that are available to you at the time to kind of do God's work, if you will.
Yeah, see, I disagree. I think it's what the Buddhists say. It's not so much about the past and the future, because you're creating your future by what we do now. The Buddhists say it's about living in the now.
Oh, I agree with that too.
That's where life is. And in the West, we're looking back, we're looking forward, but we're not in the now. Like right now, I'm with you now. I'm not thinking about what I'm going to do when we hang up in a half hour or whatever it is, or what I have to do tomorrow. Because I'm talking about what's going on right now, because this moment won't happen again.
Well, that's a contradictory perspective that I hold simultaneously as my other one.
Gotcha. Yes. Well, there you go. You can hold both, because I'm with you. Yes. Listen, I can sit up here and say, oh, I'm so much in the now. But guess what, baby? I better be able to pay my rent at the end of the month. That's the future. So, yeah. You know, you're right. You gotta plan. But for me, and then you may be able to resonate with this. This is another story. We're doing a lot of parables today, and I love it. But this is a true story. There was a therapist I went to, and he was telling an audience about the Pope coming to America. And this is when he had a little bubble, the little Pope mobile. And this guy said, I got to see the Pope. He was a devout Catholic. And he said, this may never happen in my lifetime again. So when the Pope came, so he goes and he sets up his tripod. He's going to take a picture of the Pope. And, you know, he's back away from the street and he sees the crowds and the Pope is coming and waving and blessing. And he sets up his camera and, you know, he's so busy. He gets the picture of the Pope. But he realizes that he wasn't there because he was so busy setting up and making sure he got the right angle and all these things that he really wasn't in the moment. It's like people who go on vacation and they come back and show you the pictures, and they're more excited when they're showing you the pictures than they were when they were there. And that's what life can be like. In a world where there's so much information, there's so much technology. I mean, I was doing it before you called me. And I tried to talk myself out of it. Mark, my publicist, had sent me a text. I had to talk to my wife about something. And I kept saying, I want to be centered. I want to do a good interview when Vinny calls, you know. And then I would sit down for 5 minutes. And then, oh, my goodness. I got to go get this off the stove. I got to get something to eat. And, you know, I had to really force myself. Benny's going to call me, and I need to be present. Because otherwise, I'd have missed the moment. Yes, I would have answered your questions and that kind of thing, but I still wouldn't have really been there. Because I'd have been thinking about, okay, I didn't finish this, and I got to get this off the stove, and I told my wife I'd call her back. And you know, and these are the moments that life is made up of. These are moments.
There's an old saying that it's the small things that drive you crazy, you know, like a doorknob not working properly or an untied shoelace or something like that.
Yeah.
But it's usually the little things that drive you over the edge.
I know. So I had to do that. And you know, I'm listening to you, and we've been on the phone. We've been talking for about 90 minutes or so. And, you know, you're a philosopher. You're a philosopher. And when I, you know, I Skyped you the other day, and I wrote something, a voice crying in the wilderness. And that's what you are. You're like a John the Baptist. And you get frustrated because you're saying, look, gang, I'm trying to get you. This is not Mickey Mouse. This is your life. And I'm bringing this information to you, and I'm bringing speakers on, and I'm trying to give you this, and I'm getting frustrated. But you know what? You love these people, Vinny, because you don't get upset with things you don't care about. Yeah. And that's the frustration. There's a love there. Now, you may not use that word. That's what I'm using. But things you don't care about, they don't bug you because you don't care. But you care about what you're doing. You care about the people that listen to this show. You care about the messages that you're trying to get out.
Otherwise, I wouldn't be trying to help.
Exactly.
And I always find about these, have you seen the New Age philosophy movement? It's kind of like do as thou wilt. It's more like an Aleister Crowley occult offshoot. It's very scary that some of these people. However, it's like, a number of them that I've spoken to have the exact opposite lifestyle to the one that they preach and purport to think. Like, for example, they say there is no good, there is no evil, so it doesn't matter what any of us do. And then I ask them, so why do you make health products for a living that benefit people's lives and purge toxic chemicals that evil people put into their food from their body? If you think that there's no good or any evil and that you don't have to play any part.
Yeah.
The way we live our lives is more or less the opposite of what we think a lot of the time. I seek to form a congruence. I'm only 29, and I'm just kind of like gradually going up the ladder of, shall we say, closing off rabbit holes of what appear to me to be insignificant for investigation at this point. For example, learning to play the guitar. I don't really give a frack at the moment because I'm doing so much other stuff. Learning French. You know, it'd be nice and changing up and everything. But thing is, I'm doing so many different things, learning so many amazing things that changing direction entirely and devoting a decent portion of my life to it that would actually be a requirement doesn't seem to have its appeal. Whereas I can achieve so much in so little time by doing what I'm doing now. It's kind of like prioritizing your life at the time.
And that's what you have to do, Vinny, because, you know, listen, 29 years from now, you'll be a very different person than you are now. And many
3 months
many,
from now, I will be.
No question. But definitely 29 years. And so the things that you're not doing now, you may make more room for. But Vinny, I want to ask you something. Can I tell people where they can buy this book?
I'm surprised you haven't done it several times already. We still have half of this segment and one more segment to go after this. I'm sorry we got delayed in starting the broadcast.
Oh, no question. I just want to, can I say it?
This radio show is like a bathtub. Doesn't work very well without a plug.
Okay. I want to tell the listening audience that Alien Scriptures, Extraterrestrials in the Holy Bible, you can purchase it at Amazon.com. You can purchase, it's $9.89. You can pick up the Nook or Kindle version, which is $4.99, or you can go to my website, which is MichaelJSCarter.com, and you can blog me, and you can also pick up the book there. So I commend it to you, and you can always, you know, write me and give me your opinion and tell me I'm crazy or maybe I'm not or whatever. But I want to get the word out there. Amazon.com, Alien Scriptures, Extraterrestrials, and the Holy Bible. There you go.
I also wanted to talk about what was it? Subjectivity. You know how you're talking about unity and how that's really important to realize that we're kind of all one and to live in the now and that kind of thing. I hold that view, but also at the same time, I hold on to a value in the unique perspective of subjective analysis. How does this feel for me? Do you know what I'm saying? Like having your own take on situations is what makes you unique. And if you're not unique, then in a lot of ways, you don't perform vital functions for the continuation of society. I think the way society has been structured by the psychopathic quote-unquote elite has been to, let's say, suppress that whole, you know what, I can make a difference in this world. I can help people in any in amazing ways. I can make history. That they're trying to suppress that personal, subjective contribution to the holistic journey that we're all going through. You know what I'm saying? Like if everybody's on the merry-go-round together, one person stepping one foot off the merry-go-round and pushing it just that little bit faster can make everybody fall off if it goes too much. You know, one person can make the difference no matter how hard the ride's going already.
Well, I don't think that those two are definitely opposed to each other. There is, like I think I mentioned before, there is unity doesn't mean you give up your uniqueness. Unity means that no matter what happens, you realize that we are part of a whole. No one is so unique that what they do to other people, what's done, does not affect them. It's like you go out to the ocean and you put some ocean water in a glass, and then if that ocean water in the glass thought that it was different from the rest of the ocean because it was in the glass, that'd be absurd. So I'm not talking about giving up one's unique gifts. I'm just saying that maybe we are so unique, people think they're so unique that they forget that the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. That's what I'm talking about. And as far as
what I'm talking about is that the whole does not exist without the sum of the parts.
Well, you know, we may be saying the same thing, mm-hmm. but I don't think that unity means that I have to give up who I am and my gifts, but they all go back to the whole. And in a culture that prides itself on individualism, I think it's easy to say, it's easy to forget that I am my brothers and sisters' keeper.
Could I relate this? Let's say it's about a child comes into this world, you raise them as best you can, you send them out into the world and they can do whatever they want, and if they need help, they come back for it, and you give it to them, right?
Yeah.
That's the human race.
Well,
and our relationship with the gods and aliens and everything, isn't it?
Well, I think it is to a degree. I mean, it's different. You're more likely, one is more likely to help their daughter or their son than a stranger. What I'm saying is that, and you can't do anything you want. You are responsible to other people. That's the difference between the Eurocentric thought of Descartes, I think, therefore I am, which is very individualistic because there's no I in team. Whereas in many Aboriginal cultures, it's we are, I am because we are, and we are because I am. Very different visions of what life is like.
I believe it's a kind of like, I like to give people their due credit. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think Chris Valley's a cannabis activist in New Zealand. I don't know what your views on cannabis are, but I think it should be legalized to prevent most people from smoking it, especially kids, to that matter. And I realized after interviewing him, I think this was actually the first full-length interview I'd ever done with him, and I'd known him for like five, six years. He'd actually sacrificed the bulk of his life. Incredibly smart dude. And he spends all his time financing, working, and supporting the cannabis movement. And he's been doing so for decades, right?
Yeah.
given up the best years of his life. And I feel that he's greatly underappreciated and deserves profound thanks and acknowledgement for his sacrifices. And I think this applies to all of us to a large degree, is that the part of the reason, I think, that we really try hard to do something good is because we need to be acknowledged and appreciated for it, not to do it in the first place, but to continue doing it. I think without encouragement, people fall off that bandwagon of doing the right thing for people and become bitter, egotistical, and say, I'm going to take care of me and my family, F the rest of you. And I've seen it happen to people.
I agree. I agree with you. People want to be acknowledged. People, they want to know that they're not invisible, that I have significance, that I matter. Now,
they need love.
Yes, in a word, yes. And the only trick to that is that when one matures and gets to realize that I also have to be able to accept myself, I also have to be able to appreciate myself, I also have to be able to love myself before someone will really love me. Because the greatest love of all is self-love. And if you're waiting to be affirmed by someone else, you could be waiting a very long time. And so it's that fine line between loving oneself. Because loving oneself means, yes, putting good food in your body, wearing clothes, I mean, taking care of yourself, but it also means having healthy boundaries, that I'm not going to let someone do this to me, whether it's in a erotic relationship or an intimate relationship or a casual relationship. You know, loving yourself is being able to say no. Loving yourself is having good boundaries. Robert Frost says, good fences make good neighbors. So it's also because if you're waiting for someone else to affirm you, you may be waiting the rest of your life. It's like the disclosure piece on a more abstract level. If I'm waiting for Obama, or if I'm waiting for my government to tell me that what I've been through is real, I may never get affirmed, but I know what I experienced.
I have the perfect analogy. I walked into the kitchen. I saw it was filthy. I totally cleaned that stuff up, man. And the whole kitchen was spotless. And I thought, and I looked at the spotless kitchen that I made and I thought, that's awesome. That looks really nice. I feel great. And then my wife walks in and she says, wow, the kitchen's really clean. And I go, yep. I didn't need her to say, wow, the kitchen's really clean. I knew it was. But it still felt good.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great analogy. We need both. But we need to be able to affirm ourselves. I think that's the greatest love. Because if you don't, you may go a long time before someone says, you know what, Vinny, you did a real good job. And if you're waiting for that and waiting for that, and then you don't get it, And then you might start saying, "Well, I'm not good enough. They didn't affirm me." It's like a circular. It's the logic of absurdity.
And it gets even worse the more compliments that you get for the lesser achievements. You know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's always good to have other people affirm you, but it's always good to affirm yourself.
Yeah. Otherwise, what was it? Somebody. If you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're coming to break now. Remember to check out the homepage, thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Check out the people who've been sponsoring the show of late. And also remember the primary source of income for this show and has been funding me for the last 4 years that I have been on air is you, the listeners, giving me gifts through the PayPal and the Kiwi Bank account. This is largely listener-supported broadcasting. I mean, we have advertisers here and there or whatever, but they're basically just listeners themselves who want to donate something to the show too. So it cannot survive without you, ladies and gentlemen. Big media companies and everything like that, they need big corporations to be sponsoring them. This is real media, and it needs real support from real people just like you. So please go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com and sign up to give a regular automatic payment, either through the PayPal or bank account details that are available there. We'll be right back with the Reverend Michael Carter.
I never meant to lie. Special people change. How many lives are living strange? Where were you when we were getting high? Slowly walking down the hall, faster than a cannonball. Where were you when we were getting high? Someday you will find me caught beneath a landslide, in a champagne supernova in the sky. Someday you will find me caught beneath the landslide, in a champagne supernova, a champagne supernova in the sky.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's now the final segment with Michael Carter. Speaking about being a philosopher, And a philosopher means somebody with a love for knowledge. I say that's about right. It's kind of like a thirst for knowledge. And I drink now from a cool mountain ice melt stream, pure as the driven snow. Michael Carter, welcome back.
Thank you, brother. It's good to be back. This has been great.
It has been. Now, we need to plug the hell out of your book, and we're going to spend this 25 minutes doing so, ladies and gentlemen. So we're going to impart some knowledge to you, and we're also going to show you the places where you can get the book, and of course the links and the blog post for this show. If you search Reverend Michael Carter on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com little search tab in the top right hand corner, you should be able to come up with this, as well as the link to the Amazon book where you can buy it. So Michael, if you wouldn't mind, tell us a little bit about the name of the book, what it's about, and so forth.
Okay. The book is called Alien Scriptures, Extraterrestrials, and the Holy Bible. Now, I did add a couple chapters. I added a chapter on Islam because I believe that the three monotheistic religions are basically telling the story of extraterrestrial contact. And, of course, the same, many of the characters in the Torah, the Hebrew Torah, the New Testament, are also in the Quran. The book, you know, it also added my own lessons learned, if you will, or as I was saying to you, Brother Eastwood, you know, the wisdom gleaned from these contacts. And I went through the Bible, and I will go over, you know, with the time allotted, as quickly as I can, in case there's questions or whatever. And I believe that the Hebrew religion is originated with extraterrestrials. Why? Because there's no Hebrew religion until after the Exodus. Because the Hebrews are in, after they cross through the Red Sea, the ocean split, which I believe the sea splits, which I believe was caused by this craft. They're following the pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night. And basically, what they're saying is this craft looked like a cloud, or it emitted a cloud. Modern day UFO sightings do the same thing. And at night, it glowed like fire. So it's the pillar of fire by night. They follow it. Well, it says they followed it for 40 years, but it's in the air. That means it's intelligently guided, and they stop at night. They camp underneath of it. It's supposed to be manna or food that was thrown down from the craft to the Hebrew people. This is a UFO. At least it's a UFO. It's an unidentified flying object. So you can't, Christianity comes out of Judaism. And so here we have the beginning of the Hebrew religion. They get the commandments. There were 613 of them in the beginning. They narrowed it down to 10. Or as I heard one comedian say, we narrowed it down to 10, but adultery is still in. However you want to look at it, they narrow it down to 10. But people have to remember that these laws were only meant for the Jewish people. They weren't meant for everybody else. You were not supposed to kill. It says thou shalt not kill. In the Hebrew, it means thou shalt not murder. That's the correct translation, the Hebrew translation. No, you don't go sleep with your neighbor's wife while he's on a business trip. You don't kill. You don't covet your neighbor's things. But this was only for the Hebrew people. It was not for the goyim. It was not for the uncircumcised ones. It was not for the dirty Gentiles. Why? Because they go into the promised land where there's men, women, and children, and they take the land and they kill them. What happened to the Ten Commandments? So that's one piece of the journey, Vincent. It also made me think about what kind of God will kill all the firstborn Egyptian babies. To me, I interpret this person as the commander of a spaceship, because I could not worship a God that would kill babies. Now, so we know about Ezekiel. We know about Ezekiel chapter 1. He's on the river Chebar. He describes the craft that he sees. This is a craft. And he says he's taken up into the air. So for those of you who brought your Bibles, read the first chapter of three chapters of the book of Ezekiel. I want to jump now to there are other passages in the Bible that talk about I interpret as contacts, but I want to move on with the time allotted. The book goes into it. Let's go to the birth of Jesus. We know that stars do not fly across the heavens and stop and shine lights down on mangers. We know that. We know that doesn't happen. If that happened, the whole gravitational pull of the earth. You want to talk about tsunamis. You want to talk about earthquakes. If a star did that, this is just a little bit of what you would experience. But this craft, which I think it's a craft, shows the wise men where Jesus is, shines a light down on it. And here we have the beginnings of Christianity. Now, Jesus was not Christian. He was Jewish. But he says, my kingdom is not of this world. He says that. And for me, if your daddy is an E.T. and your mother's human, that means you're not fully human. You're not fully human. And we're just going to take the clues that we see in the Bible. Now, whenever the angel appears, one thing, when angels appear, women always get pregnant. I always found that interesting, that this God was very concerned with sexuality. You were supposed to not intermarry. But wherever an angel comes up, in the book of Judges, chapter 13, when Samson is born, his mother is barren, as was Abraham's wife, Sarah. And the angel appears. That means when barren, that they were past the point of menopause. They were elderly women. But yet, they wound up pregnant. An angel appears. Gabriel tells Zechariah that his wife is barren, but will conceive in the Gospel of Luke. His wife is named Elizabeth. Elizabeth is the mother of John the Baptist, who's a cousin of Jesus. I just mentioned Genesis chapters 11 and 23, when Abraham's wife Sarah is barren and she gives birth. And of course, there's the birth of Jesus. There's always these extraordinary men who are born from these unions. And so Jesus says, my kingdom is not of this world. When he's before Pilate, and Pilate in the book of John says, you don't answer me at his trial. He says, don't you know I have the power to crucify you? And what does Jesus say? His reply is, you would have no problem. You would have no power over me unless it was given to you from above. If I wanted to, I could pray to my Father, and he would send 12 legions of angels. Any power that you have over me is given to you from above. And we look at the word angel, which is from the Greek angelos, which means messenger. It doesn't mean that these beings had wings, even though I've had people argue with me that they've seen angels with wings. I'm sure you have. I'm not going to say that that's not true. That's your experience. But I believe our ancestors showed wings on these beings because they were trying to say that they could fly. Mm. And so, I mean, in Abraham, he feeds them. He calls them the Lord. And so he feeds them, and they eat. They're not wispy, etheric little beings with wings. They eat their flesh and blood. He feeds them. And so,
Can I quickly make a mention?
Please.
Oh, you've got to turn your speakers down. There was a little bit of feedback, or at least there was. It's gone now. It reminded me of the ancient Greek stories about all of the quote-unquote gods that came down from Olympus, took the forms of other animals and mated with humans left, right, and center. There are all these demigods and stuff walking around, you know? That's kind of what we're talking about here as well, isn't it?
Yes, because they could shapeshift. We've heard that from Native Americans. But you see where I'm going with this. Now, the other thing is, for instance, in Isaiah chapter 40. Verse 22, it reads, it is he who sits above the circle of the earth, and its inhabitants are like grasshoppers. How did somebody 5,000 years ago know that the earth was a sphere or a circle and that its inhabitants are like grasshoppers? You only can get that perspective if you are above the earth. I was taught that the earth was flat until Columbus discovered that it wasn't. So again, these are the things that had me asking questions. In the book of Job, in the book of Amos, chapter 5, verse 8, who made the Pleiades and Orion? Who turns deep darkness into dawn? I mean, what do they know? How did they know 5,000 years ago about the Pleiades? Here we have Job, chapter 9. Who made the bear and Orion? Who made the Pleiades and the chambers of the south wind? I mean, they're talking about constellations, some of them that we didn't discover until modern times, 18th, 19th, 20th century, and they're talking about them 5,000 years ago. So this is the premise of my book.
Well, you're talking about more or less, would you say Jesus is an alien?
I would say that he is a hybrid, that his mother was human, that his daddy wasn't, and that at least one could say, in the short way, yes, I'm just trying to be diplomatic here, we could say that he was from an advanced civilization.
And he made good beer, I hear, because he brews. That's the sound of a bass drum and a thimble and a cymbal falling off a cliff. Ba-dum-tsh. Okay, now, there was the other element here about what I think God is actually in the modern context. You talking about philosophy and what have you, the knowledge that has been lost, particularly when the Romans burned the Library of Alexandria. Of course, secreting away most of the best-kept secrets of the world's true history for themselves.
It was the Greeks.
Okay, and locked away in the Vatican. For goodness knows how long, right?
Well, yeah, there are a lot of... I wish I could go through the Vatican's library, yes.
I bet you that you're one of goodness knows how many biblical scholars who would just die with joy in order to get into the Vatican library. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
I don't know. What is it about? Knowledge is power, hide it well. And the Vatican does hide it well. And they're still in power.
They're in power. They're in power. But I think they're a little bit on the retreat. And I'll tell you why. They got this new Pope, Francis. He's pretty progressive. At least he talks a good game. But he also knows that, and the Vatican also knows, because they've been doing this for the last 6-10 years, they've also been talking about the possibility of extraterrestrial life. Now, what they do is they've gone from talking about the possibility of it to making statements like they did the other day about we could baptize extraterrestrials. But even then, Monsignor Baladucci, the late Monsignor Baladucci, came out and said that, of course, there's extraterrestrial life. Now, they couldn't say that unless he as a Monsignor, couldn't say that unless he was given permission to. There's a whole interview with him in Whitley Strieber's book, Confirmation. But they'd want to be on the right side of history. And so, because they can see the writing on the wall, that sooner or later, the gig is up, and that the religions of the world, at least Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, the three monotheistic religions, they're going to have to do some shuffling around when this happens. And it is happening now. So what they're doing is they're saying, you didn't tell me, I told you. So they've come out and said, basically, that yes, there's probably life on other planets. So in order to stay relevant, they're going to have to talk a different game. This Pope is talking a different game. He's saying the right words. He's hitting the right notes. But that's because he has to. That's because they have to. Because in our lifetimes, not unless I run out here and get hit by a car or you, something happens, we're going to see in our lifetime probably the full disclosure of extraterrestrial life.
Drips and drabs to slowly prepare the population so that when the full disclosure comes, most people just shrug it off and a few people will freak out, but then they'll be ostracized and or told to calm the frack down. And in so doing, all the humanity will just go, oh, wow, there's aliens that are out there and we're just humans. Now we need a one world religion and a one world government. You know, that's my concern about how this might be played, rather than be used for the knowledge and the technology and maybe advancements and consciousness, which a lot of this information going public could connote. I fear it's misuse by those currently in power, so that they can, as they always do, get more power.
I agree with you. But see, this is the thing about prophecies, any prophecies. And this is what my brothers and sisters who are deeply involved in interpretation of Bible prophecy, they don't realize that these are probabilities. They don't have to be. My concerns are as deep as yours, that it depends on what star people that they're talking about. It depends on the star people that we're working with. Because we are working with star nations, and all of them aren't the same. And so if they're more regressive, yes, we can have the wool pulled over our eyes. They can use our religions to take advantage of us. I think that's a concern. But I also think that things don't have to happen if people wake up, because quantum physics tells us that there are many probabilities. Heisenberg's uncertainty principle talks about probabilities. And if people wake up, the prophecies don't have to come through and come true. And so in some ways, in this case, the prophecies that don't come true are the good ones, because we don't want a one world government. We don't want to be microchipped. And we don't want, but it is, you're right. We have the surveillance. I mean, I live in a surveillance state. We have this militaristic war on terrorism, which means my 8-year-old daughter will never live in a country, or I don't want to say never, that's not at war, because we're at war with an ideal. There's no such thing as a war on terrorism, because you can't have a war against an ideal. There's no enemy there. But it can look grim. But shows like yours, but people coming out talking about these things, you know, there doesn't have to be their probabilities. And quantum physics tells us that what we focus on, we create. So you want to focus on fear, you want to focus on, and I'm not saying being an ostrich, but I'm saying, like Gandhi said, you want peace, then be peace. You want love, then be love. You want to create a world other than what we have, then be part of the process.
I want to tell all those people who send messages to me and other talk radio show hosts telling us what to do and how to do it and what have you. And my answer is, dude, what's stopping you from doing it? I'm doing my own thing. I don't seem to be making too bad of a mess of it. Perhaps you could start doing your own thing instead of expecting everybody else to live your dream so that you can live vicariously through us. Yes. That's a bad move, brother.
Yeah, it is, brother.
Okay. And speaking of which, you got so many things on the go. You've heard the analogy, there's so many pots on the boil at the same time.
Yes.
All right. When you're in a complicated situation and you're trying to be independent and whatever, you do have a lot of pots on the boil, and it's good having like a wife and good friends and stuff like that, because occasionally one of them will point out when one of those pots is starting to burn.
Yeah.
You need to turn the heat down a little bit, you know. And the analogy I'm talking about with this awakening process, as we're talking about on many facets, many levels, it's a multifaceted awakening. Okay, it's kind of like a psychological tortoise and the hare. The bad guys are kind of like the tortoise. They've been moving very slowly and gradually into position towards that finish line. And the bulk of humanity is the hare. We've gone asleep under the tree and relaxed and confident that we can win any race we want. And suddenly we've woken up a little late. And we're rushing towards the finish line before the tortoise gets there. You know, like that's kind of what we're at. And when it comes to volunteerism and making your own contributions to the world, not like, oh, I've made a difference in the world, I'm great, look at me, Vinny Eastwood, blah, blah, blah. Whoever the hell you are, I don't really, it doesn't seem to matter. What matters is if you live your life with the purpose of helping others, you always wind up helping others a hell of a lot more than you could ever possibly realize. And the reverberations of your effects of helping others permeate throughout eternity. Okay? That's what history is. It's living in the now. So all of history is just one moment that's been stretched out and kept going. It's a continuous moment. It's even right now here in this very room. In a way, we get to share a moment with everybody who has ever lived or whoever will. And that's a pretty encouraging thought, don't you think? Because if we're going to be defending humanity from all of these different ways in which we're under attack, I've adopted what's called the tactic of the cactus. For every way in which you're being attacked, a cactus kind of has a spine jutting out in every single direction. So it doesn't matter where it gets attacked from, it'll be giving that little attacker a prick to remind them, leave me alone. Two types of people in the world, those who want to be left alone and those who won't leave you alone. And when it comes to conspiracy and scumbaggery and a holistic attack upon our psychology, our health and well-being and spirituality, I can assure you, ladies and gentlemen, that somewhere in the world there is one person, usually only one, for whom that exact particular little attack is something that they fully understand and are utterly capable of resisting. And all those little spines, individually, without even awareness of each other, jutting out in every single direction, is collectively protecting humanity even as we speak.
Yes. And remember, it's the people we become on the journey, not the journey itself.
Yeah. The Reverend Michael Carter, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for this conversation. I've quite enjoyed it.
Thank you so much. Let's do it again.
Now, quickly rattle off again, just as a reminder, before we cap off the broadcast, what the name of your book is and whereabouts they can search for it.
Okay, again, and thank you again, Vinny. It is Alien Scriptures, Extraterrestrials in the Holy Bible. You can get it at Amazon. It's $9.89, I think. At least it's here in the States. It may be cheaper. $9.89 for the paperback, $4.99 on Nook or Kindle. You can also go to my website, which is Michael J.S. Carter, J as in Jerry, S as in Sam, Carter.com, and you can purchase the book there. You can also write me there. And I thank you for your support, and I wish all of you and Vincent richest blessings.
And of course, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish continued broadcasts like this to exist in this world, everybody has to play their part. Now, some of you, I know you have slave jobs, I know the hours are long, and I know you get stuck in traffic and you have to deal with all of this crap and what have you. And perhaps you've got kids, other time commitments and things like that. You can't contribute to the so-called truth movement in ways such as having a radio show and what have you, because you just don't have the time. But you do have, a lot of you, just a little bit of spare resources to donate to the people who are doing that important work in your stead, people like myself, people like Michael. And if you're spending your hard-earned cash on good things rather than poisons and scumbaggery and donating to political parties that consistently lie to everybody and only follow the dictates of its largest donors, then support people like us, and you're inherently supporting all the people like you as well. So please go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and donate or start up a regular donation gift today. We'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for listening.